Hi, I'm Lauren.
And I'm Mike.
And this is Marriage is a Scream. So I'd like to say thanks to our current listeners. Welcome to any new listeners. And thanks to our listeners for sharing and participating in the group on Facebook. I would also like to thank Sherry Thomas for her contributions this week. We will be visiting her personal stories a little bit later. Okay, so we will be talking about the Crescent Hotel. It's located at 75 Prospect Avenue in Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
So before you go too far, I actually did a little bit of research. And not like into your story, but just like into this hotel. And it's actually, it's beautiful. It's a super nice looking place. I looked up like rates. They've got like a special going right now, like $99 a night. So I thought, if this isn't too scary, we'll book a trip. But if it is really scary, we'll definitely book a trip.
Well, I think that you're out of luck.
Oh, so it's not really scary.
It's known as America's most haunted hotel, and they offer ghost tours nightly.
Nice.
So, our story starts in 1886. Crescent Hotel and Spa was built for $294,000, which in today's money would be $8
million. Wow.
So, it was a luxury retreat for those wishing to bathe in the healing springs of the area. It opened May 20th. The resort was filled with old money and politics. At the gala they held for the opening, 400 people attended, and the guest speaker and guest of honor for the night was James G. Blaine, who was the Republican nominee. Bad luck was basically built into the hotel. In 1885, a young man who was either 17 or 18 named Michael was catcalling a young woman outside and trying to get her attention, and he ended up falling down to where 218 is currently located.
So he fell, like, how far? A floor, two floors or so?
I think it was just one floor.
He was a worker?
Yes. Yeah, he was a stonemason.
That's the first casualty.
Yes. So not long after it opened, people lost interest in the healing waters and stopped coming. The hotel fell into disrepair and closed in 1901.
Well, that's not very long.
So, in 1908, it was reopened as the College and Conservatory for Young Women. It was a very prestigious school, and only girls from well-to-do families were accepted. The cost for a year was about $270 to $375, which today would be about between $8,000 and $10,500.
Okay, so it's pretty comparable to today's, you know, private institutions.
Yeah, sure. So they were running the school from September to June and the hotel in the summer, in the summer months. And our bad luck continues here. So they say that a young woman was either thrown or she jumped off of the third floor balcony to her death. When they examined her body, she appeared to be with child.
Oh.
Some suggest that she fell in love with a boy from town who was part of a poor family, and she killed herself because she knew she was pregnant and her father was forbidding the relationship to continue. This occurrence is swept under the rug and the enrollments continue. Tough economic times are brought on by the Great Depression and the school closes its doors in 1924.
Oh, okay.
So in 1930, we give it a go again as a junior college.
So it's got this like 6 and 7 year break. So the first break was 7 years and it opened. And then now it's closed again 6 years and it opens.
Yeah. So, 1930, they open up a junior college. They have a girls' basketball team there called the Crescent Comets. And even the basketball team isn't enough to save the school.
Did they not have a winning record?
It closes its doors again in 1934.
They were like the Cincinnati Bengals of basketball.
Which brings us to 1937. Where we're going to stray a little from the story of the hotel, because in 1937, a man named Norman Baker buys it.
So Norman Baker buys a hotel, not to be confused with Norman Bates and a motel.
Correct.
Right. Yes. It's very, very similar. Did you check? I mean, is there any Was there any parallels to the Bates Motel to this at all?
Or? I think his mom pretty much stayed out of it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so just a little preface to this Norman Baker timeline. There is a book for anybody interested in reading more about Norman Baker called Quacks and Crusaders, The Fabulous Careers of John Brinkley, Norman Baker, and Harry Hoxsey. He's referred to even on his memorial site. Like, there's a page that shows where he's buried and stuff. They refer to him as a convicted felon, inventor, and a charlatan.
So in his epitaph, his when you would go find out his memorial page, it calls him a convicted felon, a charlatan, and an inventor.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of a dubious page. I think I would ask for something nicer.
So people describe Norman Baker as having a fetish for purple. Many sections of the hospital that he turns the hotel into were painted purple. Norman drove a purple automobile and wore white linen suits with purple shirts and purple ties.
Okay.
We have to get you an outfit like that for work.
I would look like the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man if I was in a white linen suit with purple or blue. It would be a nightmare.
People at work would love it.
It's either that or it would be the Michelin Tire Man, or maybe even like the Good Humor Ice Cream Guy. No thanks.
Okay, so we're going to start at the beginning of Norman Baker's life. He was born on November 27th of 1882.
So he just had a birthday.
Yeah, yes he did.
He just had a birthday.
Yep. And that actually lines up with our first episode almost. Yeah. Just about.
That's kind of interesting.
He was born in Muscatine, Iowa, to a wealthy family. He was the 10th and last child of locally prominent parents. His father, John Baker, owned a manufacturing firm and had reportedly patented 126 inventions.
Jeez.
His mother, Frances Mary, was a writer before she was married. Like, apparently a well-off writer at that. So Baker left high school after his sophomore year. His early years were spent working as a machinist. In 1904, after witnessing a vaudeville magician act, he organized his own traveling troupe that starred a mind reader called Madame Pearl Tangle, who was played by many actresses. It is said that he married one of these actresses at one point, but the marriage ended in annulment. Honestly, I think that she dodged a bullet.
Yeah, from, I guess as we're setting up this story, it sounds like she would have dodged a bullet.
After touring for 10 years, he returns to Muscatine in 1914, where he patented the air caliphone, which was a portable organ run by air pressure that could be heard for a quarter of a mile.
That's the caliphone. That's those, you see them at circuses or fairs.
Yeah. So, just a little side note really fast. I'm referencing a lot of stuff in here, and I'll reference a lot of stuff later. And those things, I'll be posting pictures and videos and stuff to the Facebook group for anybody that wants to have a visual of any of this stuff. In addition, he was also running an art school and a mail order business.
He's a very industrious kind of dude.
He's really not a bad businessman at this point in
time. Well, he's very involved.
Sure.
Businessman.
So in 1925, he gets the Chamber of Commerce to sponsor his radio station, KTNT, Know the Naked Truth. I thought this was interesting. Although it was originally licensed for 500 watts, the station's power was often closer to 10,000.
Whoa, he was really transmitting some distance.
Making it heard all across the U.S., focusing on rural and small town issues. He was a big supporter of Herbert Hoover in 1928 and would slander the Democratic candidate, Al Smith, on his radio by attacking his Catholic religion and supporting not-so-complimentary rumors. After Hoover wins, he invites Baker to a private meeting, and Hoover helps Baker launch his tabloid, the Midwest Free Press, in 1930.
This guy's got a very interesting background. He's like searching for what he wants to be.
Well, that's what happens when you're born into money, because you have tons of to goof money around to with do whatever you want, right? So that happened in 1930, but we're going to backtrack a year to 1929. Baker has denounced the American Medical Association, claiming that he had cures for cancer.
Okay.
So now we're going from, okay, what are you doing really, to...
I've cured cancer.
Whoa. Stop.
So because I had a traveling troupe, a couple other crazy businesses, all of a sudden I have now cured cancer.
Well, Norman learns of an alleged cancer cure, and after asserting its efficacy, despite the expeditious deaths of all five of his test subjects, he brings a convicted medical swindler by the name of Harry Hoxie to Muscatine, and by his side begins promoting his own cure.
Was Hoxie one of the people mentioned in that article? Yes. The three people? That was Hoxie. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Hoxie is a well-known quack already. He's already a crazy person.
Well, when we say quack, does this guy just have a medical degree and he's just a terrible practitioner?
I don't think so. And if he did have it, it's gone now.
Well, yeah, he's dead, so I'm sure it's gone.
He's a convicted medical swindler, which means that he wouldn't have had a license then either. So after a few years, they are run out of Iowa, which we'll get to in a little while. He refers to the AMA as American Meat Cutters Association. He organizes the Baker Institute at Muscatine. Okay. It's a 100-bed hospital and is largely staffed by chiropractors, osteopaths, and physicians from diploma mills.
So not even real. These guys have their... Oh, nice.
So remember, Norman Baker didn't even finish high school.
Right. 10th grade, he bailed.
He, like, finished 10th grade, and then he was like, I'm done. I'm going to go do something else now.
I'm a doctor now.
So now...
That's all I need. One semester of biology. I got this.
So our Norman Baker doesn't even have anything. He's got nothing going on.
Well, neither do his people at his place if they're all diploma mill people. They just paid for their diplomas.
Baker does not just promise to cure cancer, which, by the way, he is charging a lot to do for people. He is also attacking aluminum pots and pans, fluoridation of the water, and even bovine tuberculosis testing.
Okay, now the first two are still attacked today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure about the bovine TB, but...
But, I mean, it's showing that, like, he's, you know, very political about this stuff, right? At one point in 1930, Baker reported that three men attacked and fired on the hospital. But police could find no evidence except that Hoxie, Baker's associate, had fired all the shots.
There are similar cases in the news today.
In May of 1930, the state of Iowa filed for injunction against Baker, Hoxie, and three others for practicing medicine without a license. I wonder how it went on that long without them knowing that they didn't have a license. I mean, it really wasn't that long because they opened it in 1930 and they got shut down in 1930.
Okay, so it didn't take long. So, you know, it's bureaucracy, paperwork stuff.
Yeah.
Long enough that five people didn't make it.
No, they saw quite a few people.
Well, I mean, the five... These five guaranteed test subjects that didn't make it.
So the AMA pressured the Federal Radio Commission to shut down Baker, and he loses his license in 1931 in June. Among cited reasons were venomous, obscene broadcasts against the public interest.
He was an early form of social media.
So without his radio advertising, his business declines. Baker responds to AMA criticism by attacking Dr. Morris Fishbane's Jewish faith. So he basically just attacks him for being Jewish.
So he turns it from a business to a personal attack.
Yeah.
Right.
And he sues the AMA for calling him a quack, a faker, and a charlatan.
Because, you know, he did make it through the 10th grade. He's obviously a medical doctor.
Like, I just picture, like, these doctors, like, these legit doctors going to the Federal Radio Commission. He's a big faker.
Well, you know, this is before the three WTFs, but you know, they had to be thinking, WTF?
So the trial of 1932 went against Baker. His cancer cure was nothing more than clover, corn silk, watermelon seed, and water. He also lost his bid to become governor of Iowa.
I hope so.
So, poor Norman Baker, he's lost his hospital. He's lost his radio station.
He's lost his mind.
And he has run out of Iowa.
Yeah, okay? That's because he lost his mind along with those other things.
That's okay.
Oh.
He is an optimist.
Yes, he is.
And he takes advantage of situations. Okay. Right.
People.
Because in 1933, he obtains Mexican permission to operate XENTAM in Nuevo Laredo on the Rio Grande.
How many watts was this beast?
I don't know. This station was a so-called border blaster. It must have been a lot for him to be reaching who he was reaching in the U.S.
Yeah.
It operated nightly and was outside the reach of the new U.S. Federal Communications Commissions. This made XENT the most or second most powerful station in North America.
Huh.
The main objective was to promote Baker's alleged cure. A Baker hospital operated in Nuevo Laredo.
Oh.
Yes.
He had a little hospital down there.
Yeah. So, drawing the renewed ire of the AMA and local doctors.
So even the Mexican doctors are going, what?
Yeah. XENT broadcast an eclectic mix of, or broadcasted an eclectic mix of decidedly lowbrow entertainment, while most of this music was in the hillbilly style, a Baker tirade was usually included.
Will you be putting any hillbilly style music on the Facebook page?
If there's an overwhelming want for it, sure.
Okay, you're hearing it now. Request some hillbilly style music.
We need an example.
In fact, share this with as many people as you know so she can see all the requests for hillbilly style music. I'm just kind of curious.
So his tirades normally were anti-Semitic and anti-Catholic rants.
The guy's just a jerk.
So, yeah, totally. He was also said to broadcast live while having sex with his mistress.
So the guy's a perverted jerk.
Okay, Baker returned from Mexican exile.
However, just real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt. Well, not really, but if you think about this, I interrupt you the whole time. If you think about this, if he's broadcasting himself while engaged in relations with his girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
he was the first streaming porn.
Mm. I don't think so. I'd have to look that up.
Okay. Well, he was an early inventor.
That doesn't count. You can't see anything.
Yeah, well, it's audio.
That could literally be anything.
Oh, yeah. This is true.
I wonder how many people just sat there, like, making sound effects and, like, saying that that's what it was.
Or I wonder how many kids tuned in and the parents are like, what are you listening to?
So, okay, Baker returned from Mexican exile in 1937 to serve one day in Muscatine County Jail and pay $50 contempt of court fine that was appealed unsuccessfully to the U.S. Supreme Court.
So he had to pay a $50 fine and he appealed to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, as we know, he just comes right on out, right?
This every guy's time. Like Teflon. Nothing
he digs himself a hole, and then magically something good happens for him. And it's just so confusing why.
Yeah, well, something good for him is something obviously pretty bad for everybody
else. Yes. So he stumbles upon the town of Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Uh-oh, lucky Eureka.
Baker found the city down on its luck.
Of course he did.
He buys the Crescent Hotel. And you know what he does with it? Guess. You know
if I was going to guess, the guy's either turned it into a radio station or a hospital. Or he's broadcasting at his hospital.
Naturally, he's going to convert it into a hospital.
Of course he is.
And ends up treating thousands of desperate patients with his injections.
With the watermelon seeds.
Yeah. Hmm. The resort hospital opened in November, and they claim that it cleared $500,000 in 1 year.
That's incredible.
So he would only accept patients with no close family, and upon their acceptance to his sanatorium, would have them sign undated letters declaring themselves improved and well. So you show up and he's like, hey, can you like write a letter? Like, we're really, this is how I feel like it went. We're really optimistic here. I want you to write what you want to be writing to your family in a couple weeks.
And just in case you're incapacitated during your healing and you're unable to tell them how good you really feel, we'll get this taken care of now.
Yeah.
And the poor patient says, okay.
Yeah. So just consider for a second, thousands of people are coming to this place. Thousands of families are bringing their loved ones here or whatever. And it's just them having one last hope.
That's sad.
Like, it's just somebody promising them something.
I wonder how many smart enough people sat there and looked at everything he said and said, you know what? Nah, we'll take our chances somewhere else. Hopefully far more than said yes.
I feel like there wasn't a lot that you could do at that point. So anything was better than nothing.
Yeah.
Except for Norman Baker.
Watermelon seeds.
Nothing would have been better than Norman Baker. The sick patients were tortured. He would pour liquid directly into the tumor after cutting the person's body open. One treatment consisted of him drilling holes in patients' skulls and injecting a cocktail of spring water, corn silk, carbolic acid, alcohol, and ground up watermelon seeds. He would deliver his magic elixir 5 to 7 times a day with a large needle.
Wackadoo.
He frequently practiced surgery in the basement. Since many of the patients were in extreme pain and often screaming with discomfort, Baker would send them to rooms on the 4th floor, which were made into asylums. In the meantime, he would falsely date and send the letters off to the patient's family members. After the patients passed away, Baker would send their bodies to the building's incinerator. Other sources claim that he would take them to a nearby crematorium through some secret tunnel, but they have not found such a tunnel as of yet. He would then send a letter to the patient's family, like a sad letter, announcing that their loved one had died. And then he would request money to take care of the arrangements.
Meanwhile, he'd already taken care of them. There was nothing left to take care of.
Yeah, so naturally, what are you going to do with money for something that you've already taken care of? You're going to put it in your pocket, right? There's nothing else to do with it. Nobody knows the exact number of patients who died there, but estimations put it at a lot.
So when you say estimations put it at a lot, I mean, there's not even a ballpark guess? I mean, if 1,000 people a year were coming there.
I read somewhere, let me see if I read somewhere that, So a woman claims that she had a spirit box session and spirits came forth and told her that it was around 8 people a month, which would put the count at about 300 for the 3 years he was at the Crescent.
But if you've seen thousands of people a year...
Yeah, so that number is probably... Because not many people left.
I was going to say, he either had an actual success rate.
Yeah.
Well, there's some math that's bad there.
I mean, he didn't. He didn't heal a single person, obviously. Because how are you going to heal somebody with nothing?
Right.
And mind you, he's like cutting these people open. He's injecting things into their bodies. He's not a doctor.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's never been to school for anything like that.
He stayed at a Holiday Inn Express. He could do anything.
And he's not giving them any kind of pain medication while he's doing this. So he's not putting them under. They're completely awake and stuff when this is happening. So they're feeling everything.
So it's got to be more than 300 deaths. I mean, or either one of two numbers is off. The deaths is off, or the amount of people that attended is off. So, I mean, I realize it's probably very difficult to find actual numbers.
Well, remember, there's no records either.
Yeah, and it's not kept like they are today. So
word gets out about what is going on in the hospital, and the townspeople report him. But nobody does anything just yet because he's bringing a lot of money into the town. So remember, when he shows up, they're down on their luck. And now all of a sudden, all of these people are traveling from all around, giving money to their train station and, you know,
spending money at retailers, infrastructure. Yep, sure. Yep. So people tend to be a lot more tolerant or turn a blind eye when they're benefiting.
Yeah. Finally, they get him for mail fraud. His guarantees to cure cancer sent through the mail are his downfall. After a multi-day standoff with the police and FBI, Baker is finally imprisoned. The people of Eureka were so angry about what had happened that they broke down the doors and trashed the place, destroying records and even attempting to burn down the building.
They were definitely angry.
So I'd like to say that he did not face any charges for murder because they claim that his injections did not kill anyone directly. So they only got him for mail fraud. That's it. They didn't get him for, you know, running a hospital without a license to do so or anything. So he gets, I think, 4 years. Baker served his sentence in the United States Penitentiary in Leavenworth, Kansas from May 1941 to July 1944. That's like...
Yeah, that's 4 years, depending on May to July. 3.5.
Yeah. In January that year, the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals denied him early release. So in 1944, he went and tried to get released early, and they were like, nope. We barely got you for mail fraud.
You killed all these people. You're riding this out.
So... In 1946, so Baker is out already. Okay. Yeah,
about 2 years out.
He attempts to return to healing by establishing a research foundation in Muscatine, but the state of Iowa refuses permission in the public interest. They're like, nope. Like, how are you going to go back to Iowa even? They were the first people to run you out. They were
I thought he'd pick
no.
a different state.
So... He retired in Florida, where he died on September 8th, 1958, at the age of 75. He got to live aboard a large yacht until he died of liver cancer.
Wow.
Karma. I'm surprised that he had cancer.
Made it a long time,
though, 75.
Right, yeah. He should have ate more watermelon seeds.
The morgue is still located in the hotel today. So they still got it there.
Is that part of their tours?
Yes. Yes, it is. So that gets us back to our regular timeline. We're done with Norman Baker for right now. We'll see him later, a little bit later. So in 1946, the hotel is purchased by four men. The hotel is restored and travel vacation packages with the Frisco Railroad brought new tourists to the area. The workers restoring the hotel were horrified to find dozens of human bodies hidden away in various places. And although never proven, rumors persist that workers also found jars containing preserved body parts stashed away in closets.
So you're there to renovate and la-di-da, here's a skeleton.
Yeah.
Multiple places.
And, you know, yeah, I guess they would have been. 1946.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long enough time. They were decayed.
Yeah.
I mean,
sure, that's like, what, 5 years? I think. 1941?
Well, depending on when the last one, where the last one was stored or stuffed or hidden or whatever.
People then claimed it was haunted and said they heard human moans and other noises, and they had sightings of people who walked through walls or simply vanished. But the rumors are dismissed because they think that the workers are probably just alcoholics and they're having hallucinations. And they think that if it's not a hallucination, you know, they're just seeing the refugees, like, in the building, people who've taken refuge in the building at night.
Right. Squatters.
Yeah. They think that they're just seeing those people, or they think that they're just spooked by stories from the town. But eventually, the hallucinations were soon also being seen by regular upstanding citizens.
That were drunk. Or not drunk.
No, just regular.
Since they were upstanding
citizens.
Okay. So if you're drinking, you're no longer upstanding.
Yeah.
If you're drinking too much, you're definitely not.
If you're a worker and you're renovating a building, you're not upstanding.
Yeah, right.
But if you're paying,
whatever,
tens of dollars
Tens of dollars, $20.
To stay at a hotel, then you're an upstanding citizen. So people would come down from room 218, and if you remember, 218 is where Michael died.
Oh, that was Michael the Mason guy.
Yep.
The cat caller.
They would come down from 218 and demand a different room because of a screaming noise or an unexplained bouncing light.
So let's make sure we ask for that room.
Plenty of people ask for that room.
I think that, I mean, that'd be cool.
Our, one of our listeners, Sherry, I'm going to read her stories. She actually was in room 218 last night.
No way.
Yeah.
Did she know? Did she hear any stories?
So just so you guys know, we're recording this on Monday. So she was there Sunday night. So yeah, she was there. She said that she fell asleep. So she doesn't think anything happened.
See, that would be so disappointing for me because, you know, I could fall asleep at the drop of a hat. And then my snoring will probably keep ghosts away.
Ah, oh, darn.
They'd be like, no way, we can't go in there. It's scary.
Okay, so in 1967, a fire that was attributed to bad wiring claimed the penthouse level and most of the fourth floor. And in 1970, only one of the owners is still living. So the other three have died. And the hotel is eventually turned over to Resort Enterprises Incorporated. So in 1972, the hotel is sold to Crescent Heights Developments Incorporated and is owned by four investors. The purpose of this group was to restore the Crescent to its former glory while modernizing the amenities. It was during this time that the supernatural occurrences were first reported. So in 1985... Willie Nelson played here to a sold-out crowd in the Crystal Ballroom, and then Governor Bill Clinton spoke to an annual chamber banquet. In 1988, it switches hands again after the Wichita Federal Savings and Loan of Wichita, Kansas, took possession, and they then sold it to Gary and Carol Clausen.
I could see that place being used for some pretty, I guess we could call it highbrow events, because it's beautiful. When yeah, you it's look huge. At it, it's beautiful.
It's very large. So in 1997, Marty and Elise Rennick purchased the Crescent Hotel for $1.3 million. They oversaw a six-year restoration and renovation of the hotel rooms.
So that was a discount. If you earlier you said it was like the equivalent of $8 million to build it. It's been bought
to
and sold.
To build it. Well, yeah, but still, and they're only buying it, but that doesn't say how much they spent renovating it.
Right.
And restoring it. They probably put
a couple million into that.
Much more than that into it. And that's without having to rebuild the structure itself. Unfortunately, in 2009, Marty Rennick dies in a car accident. And Elise currently still remains the hotel's current owner.
Oh, that's very cool.
So, in 2016, they placed it on the National Register of Historic Places. So that's...
Nice.
That's our history. We're going to get into some ghosts now. So, obviously they think that the girl who, the student
uh-huh.
from the college who threw herself off the balcony.
Or allegedly threw herself off the balcony.
Yes. Or was pushed or whatever happened. They say that late night visitors on the balcony tell of hearing an eerie, fading female scream, and even on nights when there is no breeze, one of the balcony's rocking chairs will sometimes be seen gently rocking back and forth, even as the others sit perfectly still. They actually call her the Lady in the Mist.
What room was that? Is that a balcony to a room, does it say? Or
not,
is it open
I'm not
balcony?
Sure. It's just
I
the
wonder.
Third floor balcony. They call her the Lady in the Mist because witnesses claim that sometimes people will see a ball of mist with a woman inside, like the figure of a woman, falling down to the ground.
Huh.
So, they say that one of the nurses in the hospital had a little girl, and at one point in time, the little girl was in the hallway playing, and she fell through the railings and the stairs on the third or the fourth floor, I think. The fourth floor. And she fell all the way down and she died. Aww. And they say that the little girl ghost likes to laugh and play tricks on unsuspecting guests. Her name isn't known, but her laughter is often heard. She likes to gently poke people or tug on their earlobes.
Huh.
So they also, of course, report seeing a shape of a man wearing purple.
So he made it from Florida all the way back up to his...
We have some Norman Baker.
Norman Baker is back.
Room 419 is known as Theodora's room. It's speculated that she was a nurse who became stricken with cancer while employed at the hospital and then became a patient until she died in room 419.
She had to believe then. I mean, if she gets cancer, she's seen all these other patients being treated. And then she decides to stay. I mean, it seems like that, you know, if you were really watching and it wasn't working or didn't have some kind of hope, you'd be like, yeah, not for me.
In this instance, it's really kind of messed up to say, but you would hope kind of that somebody working for someone else like that would believe in what they were doing.
Yeah, no, I get that. So she, like, you there's got to be a level of belief
there just to
for the paycheck or for just the paycheck.
Be crazy. So guests staying in that room report jewelry being moved. Both men and women report being touched lightly while they sleep. There have also been voices and unexplained noises picked up by tape recorders left running in the empty room. Guests and staff see a nurse dressed in white pushing a hospital bed down the fourth floor hallway, who vanishes as she turns into room 424. I also heard another story about a nurse who I think is on the third floor, and they say that people will they'll hear the wheels going in the hallway, and they'll open the door and they'll see a nurse dressed in white pushing a gurney with a body on it, and she walks it all the way to the end of the hall and then she just disappears. And she does that all night long, apparently. They can hear the wheels creaking all night long.
I want to see that. Scary. No, I want to see it.
That'd be so
book
scary.
Book it. We need to find some anniversary dates of these events and book it for then.
So, room 424. The door apparently, while locked, opens up and then slams shut with no one around. Voices are also heard in this room. Male guests claim to be roughly shoved out of their beds.
So in all of your research, and you know, and you've done a ton, were there any, like, ghost hunters or anybody else like that that has gone and
Ghost put on, adventures.
Like, is it on YouTube where you can see what...
We'll have to watch it later.
Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah, I watched it a little bit earlier. You know how I feel about...
Yeah, hey...
Zach Douchebaggins. What are they? If they, I think a different podcast, they call him Zach Bagel Bites or something. Everyone's so mean to Zach.
Poor guy. He's just doing his job.
I watched it with him. I watched Ghost Adventures and I couldn't finish it.
Since we're on a little sidebar, I like the BuzzFeed guys. I think they're hilarious.
Oh, the Try Guys?
Yeah.
They're not Try Guys. What are they? Unsolved. BuzzFeed Unsolved.
BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
They're the best.
Yeah. your boys.
Come concuss me. oh my God, they should send them to the Crescent.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if they've been to the Crescent.
Okay.
Tag them in this post.
Okay, so back to room 424. So we just talked about the male guests being shoved out of their beds. A common theory for this is that the original patient in that room was a female, and the nurse doesn't like men in her patient's bed. Which would make sense.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so book that room. I want to see if she can push me out of the bed.
I would pay to see that.
I'd pay to have it done. I just want to see if it can happen.
So we're going to go back to Michael the Mason really fast. We know the story. He slipped and he fell. It says from the second floor down to the first.
Well, he wasn't paying attention. Apparently he was looking elsewhere. and giving a little whistle out.
So I heard that he was like jumping up and down on the platform, like trying to get her attention and be a show off. And
well, things didn't work out so good.
Many
a man has made the same mistake. Maybe not fallen to their death, but done crazy things to get people's attention.
What do they say about women living longer?
Well, that's because you're smarter.
So, he is said to mess with lights, doors, and electronics. People report hearing a falling man scream, and one guest alleges they saw blood on the walls and hands coming out of the room's mirrors. He's also said to lightly touch females' cheeks and brush up against them, and he's supposedly very
flirty.
Flirtatious.
Flirty little fella.
And I hear that he super appreciates redheads, so.
Ah, good. We're safe.
So the basement is easily one of the more haunted locations. People claim to feel fear and possibly physical contact from a spirit. The basement was Baker's morgue during the hospital days. When a patient died, a nurse would bring the body down to the basement and refrigerate it. Then Baker performed an autopsy. In April of this year, human specimens were located on the grounds.
Where? Did they say where on the grounds? Or?
So the hotel groundskeeper just stumbled upon the first of many bottles in January.
Wow.
Altogether, they discovered 500 bottles. The ghost tour manager claims he recognized the bottle from a poster display.
You said the ghost tour manager?
Yes.
Wow, I wonder how many ghost tour employees there are.
Yeah, I saw a couple of them. I've actually, on a lot of the documentaries that I watched about it, he's in there talking and gives some backstory, which is pretty
That's super cool.
He knows, like, a lot.
I hope so. Like, he's the manager. The ghost tour manager. He should, like, know it all.
So some of the bottles contain medicines and some of them contain medical specimens, which they claim to be tumors taken from patients, put in alcohol or formaldehyde, and kept in bottles as evidence that his cures were working, which obviously they were not. All of them were buried on the grounds. Although this was considered a dump site, it seems as though a lot of thought went into this disposal of the bottles. So what I think happened was when those guys bought it in, what, 1946?
Right.
They wanted to just get rid of it.
Yeah.
They didn't want to deal with it. They didn't want it associated
all
with
the issues,
hotel.
All the stuff, yeah.
And so they just buried it out back.
Yeah, because there would be no reason. Baker wouldn't have time to do it. His team wouldn't have done it.
He was pulled out of there
right,
quickly.
Right,
like,
too
they,
fast, yeah.
They, like, sat outside waiting for him to come out for a few days, right? And so the only thing that makes sense is that...
Yeah. It's a possibility.
The people who came in after him were like, just get rid of it. Don't tell anyone about it. Just
dig a
throw
hole,
it
bury
out.
It.
Yeah. We want to get rid of this stigma that's surrounding the hotel. So they also found a 60mm film that was buried. It was in very bad shape, obviously, but they did manage to lift a few images from the film. And one of the images said, after or before Baker treatment. They also dug up an old bone saw.
Cool.
So when the Rennecks first got in there, they hired two certified mediums to come in and do a reading of the building. The mediums found that the hotel showed signs of being a portal to the other side. So I wonder if enough people die in a certain place, if the portal kind of just stays open.
It could. I mean, it's a lot of energy.
So apparently this past Halloween, they held a large seance and attendees got to participate in paranormal experiments.
Anything happened, did it say?
I don't know. I didn't see any videos from it or anything. And this was just... So I like looked up their Facebook page and stuff, and they had this as an event. So I'm just putting it in the past tense because it already happened.
Right.
So the seance utilized specimens from the dig on the hotel grounds as well.
So, you know, the Halloween time, I'd be really interested in staying down there on the anniversary of some significant events or something like that. I think
yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
There are often children seen cowering under the morgue's autopsy table pleading for help.
That's sad.
So we also have a kitty cat ghost.
No.
We have a kitty cat named Morris.
Is that why the construction worker was catcalling?
Ha ha. Isn't that a dad joke? Is that supposed to be a dad joke?
That was about the best one I got.
So some people claim to feel a cat jump in their lap or brush against their legs and then think they are imagining things when they look down and don't see anything. Hotel staff just say it's Morris the cat. Hmm. Morris was the hotel's beloved pet and mascot from 1973 to 1994. He had his own cat flat. They used to refer to Morris as general manager. When Morris passed away, management held a very well-attended wake for him. A portrait of him still hangs in the hotel lobby, along with a memorial plaque with a poem about the cat. It reads, "In memory of Morris, the resident cat at the Crescent Hotel. He filled his position exceedingly well. The general manager title he wore was printed right there on his own office door. He acted as greeter and sometimes as guide. Whatever his duties, he did them with pride. He chose his own hours and set his own pace. The guests were impressed with his manners and grace. Upstairs and down, he kept everything nice. They might have had ghosts, but they never had mice." So Morris is buried in the back of the hotel in a flower bed just beyond the veranda. There are also reports of a middle-aged man with a mustache sitting in the lobby and sometimes the bar area. He sits quietly and then suddenly vanishes.
So this place is actually significantly haunted. I mean, it's not like it's one or two occurrences here or there.
It seems to be so.
Yeah, this place is easily worth the $99 a night.
So we're going to take a small break, and when we come back, I'm going to share our listener stories with you. Welcome back from our short break. Michael had some cookies.
I did. And a little bit of milk, and I'm not even Santa Claus. Well, I'm kind of Santa Claus, but...
If you guys hear a weird sound, it's our dog, Hugo, walking on the hardwood floors.
A little beagle puppy that listens about as well as our child.
A little bit better.
Maybe a little bit better.
Okay. So we're going to get right into our listener stories. I had a lot of stories come from Sherry Thomas. She really helped out. So we've got a good amount of information here, and this is a direct quote from her on all of this stuff. And if you're listening at this point, her pictures, which she references in all of her stories pretty much, will be available on the Facebook group so that you can look at the pictures while you're listening to this. Okay, so her first story. 2006 is the first time we went up to the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Back several years ago, they had a cat named Morris, of course. I believe that was his name. Anyway, they keep his picture on the wall in the main lounging room when you enter the hotel. We were ghost hunting one night, and no one was in the hall but us. The picture I sent of the mirror in the hallway, you can see my husband and I in it. It's at the end of one of the halls about waist high. If you look at the bottom left, you can see an image there. Some people say it looks like a dog, but I say it's a cat. There weren't any cats in the hallway. I believe it was Morris.
So Morris made a cameo.
Yeah, I guess so.
Nice.
People have said they have seen a ghost cat there, and I believe it. There is no way a real cat would show up in the mirror being that high up. On our anniversary in 2006, we stayed in room 307. That's the room in the picture I sent. This picture, in my opinion, is of the spirits coming to check us out. That night when we were going to bed, my husband saw mist floating around the room on the ceiling. I didn't see it because I had fallen asleep. I was awoken in the middle of the night by the feeling of not being able to breathe. They call it sleep paralysis. I tried to wake up my husband, but I couldn't move. When I finally was able to move, I rolled over to face the wall, and there was a shadow figure standing there.
Ooh.
He had a trench coat and a top hat on. I couldn't see his face or eyes, just the shape. He disappeared after that. I don't think it's sleep paralysis because it only happens to me up there. So here's another one. We stayed in room 218 a few times. That is Michael's room. There's a lot of research you can look up about him. My husband was out on the balcony and I was inside reading a magazine. It was terribly cold that night. I heard a growl in the room. I got up to see if it was him playing a joke on me. I made him come in because it creeped me out. Then all of a sudden there was a loud scratch on the door. It sounded like it came from inside the room. I jumped up and ran to the door to see if I could catch a kid running down the hall. No one was there. Everyone was asleep or in their rooms for the night. That was creepy.
So I gotta just interject a quick story. Mm-hmm. This was a long time ago. This was before I met you. And I was in, it was either, I think it was St. Louis or Chesterfield County. We were staying, I was staying in this hotel room. And about 2 in the morning, there was a woman screaming and yelling and beating on my door. No, for real. So I got up and let her out. That was a bad joke.
I should totally edit that out.
No, you gotta leave that. It's a good joke.
That's awful. You interrupted the story for that.
I did.
Rude. Earlier that day, we went uptown to get some dinner, so we left our camcorder running with a full charge on it. When we got back, it was completely dead. My husband picked it up, and it went right to 100% charged. We never figured that out.
Huh. That's not a ghost. That's Hugo.
That's Hugo. Hugo. Come here. Come on. He says it's his bedtime. He says, why are we up so late? It's my bedtime. Spoiled. He just wants to be heard on the podcast.
There'll be pictures of Hugo on the Facebook page.
Oh, for sure. Look at his cute little face. Okay. We've stayed in other rooms also, but not much happened except during the night I would try to stay awake to see things and hear something that sounded like it was rolling down the hall. I looked out the door, but nothing was there. When I did fall asleep, I woke up because you know how it feels when someone is watching you. There in the corner by the floor and the wall was a woman in an era nurse's uniform. I kid you not. All of this is the truth. She was there, then gone.
Huh. So that falls in line with the nurses on the stories from before.
So she said, I hope you believe all of this. No one where I live believes me except my family and a husband.
We have no reason not to believe her.
Don't worry. If I didn't believe you, I wouldn't have even asked you for any of your stories. I wouldn't have even taken the... I don't even think I'd be doing this podcast if I didn't...
Right, if we didn't believe this. Believe yeah, I mean, I'm kind of along the lines of, come concuss me, but, you know,
I'm open. There's a difference between not believing and not caring.
Yeah.
Okay. In the picture I sent where the TV looks distorted, this is what happened that night. This was room 216. Once again, we were asleep, and I had the feeling someone was watching me. I was facing the wall with my right arm under my pillow. I opened my right eye only, and there at the end of the bed stood a woman that was all white. You couldn't see anything but her shape and long hair. Just a white figure. When I opened my eyes, she zipped into the bathroom. Oh my god, that sounds so, so frightening. Like, just the visual of that freaks me out. I jumped up and she was gone. That was a crazy night. It also seems like when things happen, I have that sleep paralysis. People just say I'm dreaming. I don't understand how I can be dreaming when this only happens when I'm up there. The television is right by where this woman was between the TV and the bed. The picture was taken earlier that day. This trip right here to the Crescent has been the only time I really got scared. It was room 319. It's a jacuzzi room. The bedroom area is one room, and there's a step down to the jacuzzi balcony.
Oh, now that's the room we want.
We had our digital recorder going and asking questions. When we played it back, there was a demonic-type voice on it saying something, but I don't know what.
Okay, maybe that's not the room we want.
Yeah. I couldn't believe what I heard. When we played it back, it messed up the recorder. I couldn't get it to work. The recorder ended up having to be thrown away. I, to this day, dread staying in that room. That scared me.
Okay, maybe we will stay in that room.
we'll
bring Hugo.
Now I saved the best for last. Theodora's room, 4:19. Earlier in the evening, we were asking questions like, are you here and can you talk to us? Well, we went to dinner and came back. We went to bed and I was sleeping facing my husband. The sleep paralysis happened again. No matter how hard I tried to wake up and move, I just can't. I sleep with my blankets up under my chin because I'm a chicken. I do that. I sleep with the pillows on top of my body just in case.
That's why you want that weighted blanket.
It's like last night especially, like I was doing all this research and I'm like freaking out a little. And so I had pulled it up and I'm like, I pull it up so that I don't have the option to look out. Like if I open my eyes, I can't see the room just in case somebody's staring back at me.
And meanwhile, I'm pulling the blankets off.
Yeah. Well, there was a tug on my blanket by my neck. I tugged two times, but then I was afraid to look. Then in my ear, a feminine voice said very quietly, they told me not to talk.
Ooh.
Ooh. It was plain as day, and I will never forget it. I think she was referring to us asking questions for them to talk to us. If I was dreaming, which clearly I was not, how in the world can I remember all of this so well? I can't even remember yesterday these days. There are so many stories about this place, and I'm not the only one. In the picture of the staircase beneath the lights by the chair, you can see a shadow coming down the stairs. It may just be the lights, but I don't know about this one. Probably just a reflection. The Crescent Hotel is a wonderful place and really nothing to be afraid of. We love this place so much.
I agree. It looks beautiful. I definitely think we should make it a trip.
So thank you, Sherry, for sharing your stories with us.
I think it's super awesome that Sunday night, just last night, this past weekend,
she was there the first and the second.
I'm glad she shared the stories. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's very nice of you. So that's basically the end of our episode. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing and being supportive. I super appreciate any feedback that's given to us. And we really like that you guys are on the group page and participating and sharing and whatever else you guys might be doing.
So it's really cool, too. I mean, this is, you know, I'm just supporting your idea and learning, which I'm enjoying, but see how fast it's actually growing, how many listeners you actually have out there now. I know the Facebook page is growing some too.
Yeah.
And I encourage everybody to share this and request hillbilly music on the Facebook page. I won't get to see it if you guys don't do it. So get out there, enjoy the page, check out Hugo, our crazy dog, and you know, thanks for listening to my corny dad jokes.
Okay, this has been Marriage is a Scream. See you guys next week.